Good morning. Welcome to House Education Finance. I'll call us to order. We have a quorum. And let me see, Vice Chair Clardy, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for, March 8th?
One second.
Yeah, I'm just scanning on this well again, too.
Yes, I'd like to move the minutes.
Vice Chair Clardy moves the minutes for March 8th from the Education Finance Committee. Are there any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. With that, we will move on to our first item on the agenda. We have House File 1023, and welcome to the House Education Finance Committee, Representative. Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 1023 before the committee for the intention of, wow, I haven't had enough coffee today, for the possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
Great, thank you. So with that, we have House File 1023 before us. Representative Smith, would you like to start presenting your bill, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Joachim, and the entire committee. I know we are pressed for time as an all committee, so I'll be very brief. This is a bill to get needed funding for our amazing Children's Museum in Rochester. Not only is a wonderful place for families to go, but is actively working on being more inclusive, finding communities throughout our Rochester community that doesn't have a place like this, that has needs, that maybe can't afford the normal ways to get into here, and we're expanding fantastically. So I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to hit it over to my testifier, Heather, who is the executive director.
Ed, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. I am Heather Nessler. I'm the executive director of the Children's Museum in Rochester, also known as SPARC. First, I want to say thank you, Chair Joachim, Vice Chair Clardy, and committee members, and thank you, Representative Smith, for authoring and introducing this bill. I am here today to speak to House File 1023, which would provide $50,000 in fiscal year 24 and $50,000 in fiscal year 25. Appropriated for the Minnesota Department of Education. This funding would sustain initiatives funded with previous appropriations from the Minnesota Department of Education. These initiatives, which are access and programming for diverse audiences, are critical to our community. At our core, we focus on STEAM, cultural connectedness, and health and well-being through interactive exhibits and programs in our collaborative learning environment. The story of SPARC began as the pandemic was ramping up locally. We opened our doors in August 2020, expecting to serve around 40,000 visitors in the first year. Now, just over 2 years later, we have engaged with more than 150,000 visitors in our museum, with 70,600 plus of those visitors just this past year. Our economic development region serves a population of nearly 520,000 people. And while our admission has grown by 87% between 2021 and 2022, we clearly have more families to reach. Even still, we want to celebrate the last year we served individuals from 81 counties in Minnesota, and access to our museum, which means free and reduced admission fees, has increased by 1,600%. I'm pausing right there just because that's a huge number and something we're very proud of. It's an expense that we've incurred from our general operations budget. We are a unique museum. Throughout the year, SPARC has implemented more than 750 hands-on programs in our space with more than 200 community partners. As a director of SPARC, my personal mission is to continue to find ways to serve more families, all families in our community and region. This is why we also take SPARC into classrooms at local schools through our Museum to Go program and into the community through activation of educational play in local parks. This year, we are pleased to partner with organizations like the American Indian Education Department from Rochester Public Schools, ACLA, which is the Alliance of Chicanos, Hispanics, and Latin Americans, the Pomoja Women, a group that exists to empower the women and girls of East African heritage, the Ronald McDonald House, which serves as a safe haven for families of children with devastating illnesses, Families First, Head Start, and more. We provide enrichment, special accommodations, and most importantly, free access to our museum for organizations like these in our community. We intentionally focus on early childhood screening and parent education so that the youngest members of our future generation receive support to meet important developmental milestones, which may include interventions and support. In other words, we wrap around the whole family and all families. With the continued appropriation from the funding of the Department of Education, SPARK can sustain our programming efforts and access for children and families that are in need of enrichment. We aspire to introduce our families to rich cultural traditions and diversity in arts and language. We have a successful foundation to build upon with programs like Celebrations Around the World, Sign Language Story Time, and the exploration of different art mediums, and yoga, just to name a few. Children's museums have become an even more critical community asset in serving families needing educational opportunities outside of home and school. We see a tremendous need in our community, and we do not anticipate that need to subside. In fact, we are expecting about 100,000 visitors this year, with approximately 20% of those visitors accessing with free or reduced admission because of the need in our community. And it's our duty, and I feel it's my personal duty, to make sure this gap is filled. I thank you for your time and your consideration of House File 1023.
Thank you, Heather Nestler. With that, members, I'll go to comments or questions from the table. Everybody's just settling in. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Smith and Director Nestler, for sharing. As a person born and raised in Rochester, I wish this would have been around back in my time, but it seems like you're doing great work, so thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Smith, for bringing this forward. I know when I had little kids, I would love going to the children's museums, you know, around the state, and you know, this is a great way for kids to learn in a very fun way. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. I appreciate it.
Got it. Seeing no other questions or comments, Representative Smith, final comments.
Again, I'll be brief. This is a gem for our community, and we would love for it to continue to do that, be able to expand its current successful operation. So thank you for hearing, and hopefully it will be included in the omnibus.
Thank you. With that, I will lay over House File 1023 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, or the education finance bill. It's the first year I've said omnibus this year.
Sorry, Madam Chair.
No worries. Thank you. We'll move on next to House File 1294. Majority Leader Long.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you.
With that, I will move House File 1294 before the committee today for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. So the Bakken Museum, located in my district, is an inquiry-based STEM museum that focuses on trying to help teach individual students and families about life sciences, about electricity, and about wellness. It was founded in 1975 by Earl Bakken, the inventor of the pacemaker and co-founder of Medtronic, who was a tremendous innovator in our community. And the museum is a great resource for our city, for our region, and also for our state. They do programming all over the state, which I know the testifiers will speak to. And they focus on advancing STEM as a core literacy and on reaching young people who are underrepresented in STEM. I'm a parent of two small kids. We love to go to the museums in our community. This is a particular gem, I think, in our district and in Minneapolis, because it is so focused on helping kids explore and learn about medicine, learn about wellness, and learn about the STEM disciplines. So there's a request for $100,000 in 2024 and 2025 to help continue the STEM programming that the museum does so well and to allow them to reach more students. And with that, I'd like to turn over to the two testifiers, Anika Taylor, Vice President of Education Programs and Research, and Alex Eskew, Director of Development.
Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Anika Taylor, Vice President of Education Programs and Research at the Bakken Museum. Thank you, Representative Long, Madam Chair, and committee members. I am very privileged to be here with you this morning and also quite privileged to participate in the work of the Bakken Museum. At the Bakken Museum, we consider ourselves to be focused on systems change in STEM. By sparking and inspiring curiosity, wonder, confidence, belonging, and capacity to address complex problems, we are working to equip our next generation with core literacy skills in STEM as a pathway to a more vibrant, equitable, and innovative future. The Bakken Museum has a track record of high impact and interactive exhibits and programming, with STEM education programs happening both in our museum as well as reaching youth in their own communities around the state of Minnesota. We have programming happening in 150 public schools, libraries, and community organizations throughout the state. We've traveled from Byron to Blaine, from Red Lake to Forest Lake, from Worthington to Wilmar. In 2022, we reached youth in their communities in 43 counties across Minnesota. We reach over 40,000 people a year, including 15,000 students through our outreach programs alone. Of those students, 50% are students of color, and 50% qualify for free or reduced lunch. We are continuing to expand our outreach programs into greater Minnesota schools so that we can also ensure that we are reaching our students coming from more rural locations effectively. Last year, Minnesota Compass released a study in partnership with Wilder Research and Boston Scientific, highlighting that for all students, regardless of their future plans, development of STEM identity and comfort with STEM concepts are critical parts of their educational experiences. Working hard and not giving up, willingness to fail, asking questions, approaching things from multiple angles, and comfort being able to navigate complex problems. These critical thinking skills and the confidence these skills offer, as well as the adaptability and the resiliency that come with them, these are benefits to students throughout their whole lives in both their personal and their professional contexts. However, not all students have equal access to experiences and environments that will cultivate these skills, or that will allow these students to connect and build upon their own innate abilities or explore ideas or challenges that resonate personally with them. A study released in 2020 from the Center for Astrophysics, a collaboration between Harvard and the Smithsonian, showed that out-of-school time experiences, as well as STEM-supportive adults and mentors who are not their parents or teachers, have a significant positive impact on students' interest and confidence in their own STEM participation. While many young people have amazing and empowering experiences from their heroic teachers in their schools, the additional messaging from more voices, from voices telling them that they are worthy, that they are capable, and that they are absolutely needed in the world of STEM, these are crucial components to seeing youth flourish in a collaborative STEM ecosystem. One strategy is to connect out-of-classroom experiences that relate young people's personal sense of identity with critical aspects of STEM skills that support their achievement. These experiences include things like hands-on activities guided by skilled STEM educators, experiential and interactive exhibits that spark awe, and high engagement programs that foster a sense of belonging and support multiple ways of learning and knowing. That is the work of the Bakken Museum. This is what we are doing, combining classroom visits and teacher professional development, hands-on activities and leave-behind curricula, as well as our awe-inspiring, joy-generating field trips, out-of-school time programs, and camps. When I look at the Bakken, I see change, driving a future of STEM that better represents our diverse, intersectional, and brilliant communities. In doing so, we can explore solutions for the complex problems and the tremendous opportunities that we face as a society. The Bakken Museum and our staff believe in the power of asking questions, in trying, failing, learning, and trying again, in building support and confidence to ask for help, in knowing that innovation isn't always linear, and in finding inspiration in unexpected places. We want to be part of ensuring the future of STEM is a future rooted in community, in equity, in belonging, and is a future where all kids not only see themselves in the field of STEM, but are the ones leading the charge. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, state your name for the record and proceed.
Alex Askew, Director of Development at the Bakken Museum. Thank you, Annika, Madam Chair, and Representative Long, and committee members. I would like to share a little bit more about our education philosophy, the methods by which we achieve our impressive results, and share a story about the impact of our programming through partnerships across the state. Now, Annika detailed the methods by which we make our STEM curriculum accessible and exciting for students, and we do this particularly within the walls of our museum. But over the history of our institution, our leadership has understood that we have a great potential for impact outside of our walls, reaching key communities both within the Twin Cities and across the state. We know that bringing our programming to others, where they are located, is an essential tool in intentionally engaging with communities, schools, and populations that otherwise would not have the opportunity to experience impactful STEM programming. To this end, my primary responsibility as the Director of Development is to raise diversified contributed funding streams to ensure the continued delivery of discounted or free programming to partners across the state of Minnesota. Devotion of resources towards this initiative is a key component of our equity work, our long-term strategy, and it's an important aspect in reaching our mission. I would like to take 1 minute now to share the story of a partnership that exemplifies this work. The Bakken Museum has built a relationship with Red Lake Elementary, located within the Red Lake Reservation, since 2018. That year, the Bakken secured funding to deliver our first programming to students in the Red Lake Elementary School. In so doing, a relationship was born out of mutual trust and appreciation. Since 2018, we have been able to bring 12 programs to the school, including our capstone program titled Week of Wonder, which encompasses an entire week of assembly programs, classroom workshops, and resources for families in out-of-school time. This all has been provided at no cost to the school. When asked to provide a quote, we were told by Red Lake Elementary School Dean of Students, Arlene Swenson, quote, "Staff from the Bakken Museum are so enthusiastic. Their love of science is contagious, and the children can't help but get involved. Red Lake Elementary is very fortunate to have the Bakken Museum come and share their love of science and learning with our students." Now, Red Lake Elementary is one of about 150 partnerships that the Bakken Museum has established and maintained through the pandemic. In 2019, before the pandemic impacted our traditional education systems, the Bakken Museum had over 350 similar partnerships, and we aim to recover and expand on that number as programming becomes possible again. This allocation of funding will directly impact the infrastructure and delivery of our programming across the state. Our shared vision of ensuring equitable futures in STEM will benefit our state and students for years to come. Thank you, Madam Chair, members, for allowing us the opportunity to speak on this important bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we'll go to questions or comments. Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Rep Long, or Majority Leader, no, not Majority Leader. But anyway, Bakken Museum has touched our children's lives so much. I'm a teacher in St. Paul Schools, and the energy when just knowing that you're coming in the schools, the kids just can't contain themselves. And at first they're, you know, a little nervous, and then they're like all in it. So I love what you do. I also love that it's for kindergarten up, because a lot of times when it's dealing with a STEM program, it starts at an older age, but recognizing that our children, our youngest, have the ability to do it is amazing. So thanks for what you do, and thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Long, for this bill. I have two sons that are super into robotics, and they're on the robotics team in Edina, and I can tell you that Edina families and Bloomington families absolutely love the Bakken Museum. They frequently go to the camps that you've historically had, and so just such, I mean, 100,000 for to supporting the incredible work that you do. It's an easy vote today.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from folks? Seeing none. Representative Fink.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Long. I quickly looked up the website for the Bakken Museum, and it looks like you have a static electricity party feature, which I think is really cool, and I think about kids learn best, I think, when they're playing, when they're able to freely explore, they're able to learn better, I think, when they're not confined to a certain, you know, it's not about tests, I guess, I want to say. You know, it's about exploring and playing. And I think Einstein said, play is the highest form of research. And I really believe that. And I think, you know, having museums like this for our kids is really important, especially as we're moving into a cleaner, greener economy. You know, I'm thinking about solar panels, like how do solar panels work? And I think these are the things that our kids will need to explore and learn as they grow. And so thank you very much for bringing this forward. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Ream. Any other comments or questions? With that, closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Appreciate the consideration and hope everybody comes to visit the Bakken.
Thank you. Everybody's short and sweet today. I love that. With that, I will renew the motion to lay over House File 1294 for possible inclusion in education finance bill. Next up, members, we have House File 1364 with Representative Woldemott. Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 1364 before the committee for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Woldemott, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. I should say welcome back. The bill is before us. Go ahead and proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present House File 1364, which is a bill to appropriate money to grants to museums and education centers all throughout the state of Minnesota. What the bill does, Madam Chair and members, it appropriates $500,000 in fiscal year 2024 and $500,000 in fiscal year 2025. And this gets broken down in increments of $50,000 to 10 museums throughout the state. These museums are located in Bloomington, Brainerd-Baxter, Duluth, Fergus Falls, Grand Rapids, Hutchinson, Mankato, St. Cloud, Wilmer, and Breckenridge. And that's the appropriation, Madam Chair and members. What this money will go towards is funding for access initiatives. And access initiatives include scholarships for annual family memberships, free family daily passes, school group visits, free or reduced admission, transportation for schools. And base funding is presently in place for children's museums in Duluth and in Rochester. But these other 10 museums receive no E12 funding, or if they do, it's kind of limited for a number of years. So we want to make sure that they get included as well. And this is a really, really important investment that our state can make. I know as a dad myself, I've got two daughters, I know that play is such a critical part in a child's learning and development. And children's museums and discovery centers play a critical role in the development of children all throughout the state and serve as an important feeder system for the K-12 education system. By learning, a child needs to learn how to learn by age 3 or it becomes a remedial effort. And this first critical period of brain development begins around age 2, concludes around age 7. By making these funding these appropriations, it will provide us with a prime opportunity to lay the foundation for a holistic education for children by encouraging a love of learning, paying attention to emotional intelligence, and not treating young children's education as merely a precursor to real learning. Madam Chair and members, this will be huge for children and families all throughout the state. We also know that children's museums are vehicles for economic development and attracting families to communities. That's what this bill does. That's why I bring it forward. And with that, Madam Chair, I am proud to turn it over to my testifier who can shed further light on why we hope that you will support House File 1364.
Thank you, Representative Woldemott. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Cassandra Miles, Executive Director of Great River Children's Museum. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me to be here before you today. And thank you, Representative Woldemott, for that introduction. As I said, I'm the executive director of the emerging Great River Children's Museum in St. Cloud, but I'm proud to be here representing the Greater Minnesota Children's Museum Coalition, a group of 10 children's museums from the areas that Dan just mentioned. Happy to repeat if you'd like to hear them all, but we spread across the entire state of Minnesota. We're working together to promote the proven developmental and educational benefits of safe, dynamic play environments for kids and families. We seek to be included in base MDE funding alongside the other children's museums of St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester. And as Dan mentioned, our request is that $500,000 per annum to be split into $50,000 grants equally amongst our children's museums. This is a small amount for a very large impact through field trips, programs, and access initiatives. To state that play is critical to the healthy development of a child would be a true but incomplete statement. As Dan mentioned, 80% of a child's brain development occurs within the first 3 years of life, which means that learning how to learn is a skill nearly fully developed by the age of three. By age five, 90% of brain development has occurred. Children's museums serve children from birth through age 10 or later when play and the bonds built through play with adult caretakers, siblings, and peers is one of the only tools proven to build a strong foundation for lifelong mental and physical health and learning. Through exposure to diverse positive play experiences, children's museums act as vital precursors to the K-12 education system. We complement curriculum-based learning through pre-K, kindergarten, and elementary, and each year tens of thousands of children access children's museums through school field trips and for specialized programming. Our museums focus on utilizing resources to provide access to all children, families, and schools, regardless of their ability to pay. We are host sites for supervised visits and other child-serving nonprofit organizations, and we are respectful, safe, unstructured play environments that empower children and their caring adults to engage with each other in ways that other environments simply don't allow. Children's museums provide a wide range of resources for children and families and are economic drivers in the communities in which they reside. If I could, I'd like to take a moment to speak directly to the need for this funding for the Children's Museum in St. Cloud. Great River Children's Museum resides in a 25,000 square foot donated bank building that used to be a chicken hatchery. It's rich with stories. We're still working to raise funds needed to renovate the space, but in that meantime, we have partnered with the Great River Regional Library System and several other organizations to provide programs for nearly 10,000 kids and their caring adults over the past 3 years. Racially and economically, St. Cloud is one of the most diverse cities in the state, with over 50 different languages spoken in our local school district. Together with the surrounding rural communities, there are over 80 elementary schools, not including homeschool groups and private schools, in our 11-county service region. These schools do not currently have the ability to take field trips to a place designed to foster cross-cultural connections, a place where multi-layered play experiences are proven to reduce inequities between advantaged children and their disadvantaged counterparts. For many children, especially those in our most outlying rural areas, a field trip to Great River Children's Museum may be their only chance to be exposed to a multitude of cultures while experiencing the joy of immersive, dynamic, and inclusive play environments. I say all of this to impress upon you the importance of sustainable and equitable funding for children's museums. This allows each of our organizations to reliably offer programs, camps, field trip opportunities, and more so that every child across 87 counties in Minnesota may be afforded the possibilities that I've mentioned here today. I thank you for your consideration of House File 1364 to add the members of Greater Minnesota's Children's Museum Coalition to the MDE base alongside our esteemed colleagues who are here today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for the testimony. Members, any questions or comments? No, everybody's quiet this morning. What we're going to do, members, is after this one, we're going to go to Representative Paris Vega's bill, and then Ms. Solveig Beckel has put together a spreadsheet kind of explaining all of the museums and where they are in the base or not in the base. So, with that, Representative Wolgamott, final comments.
Well, thank you again, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 1364. In closing, I first of all just want to thank Ms. Miles for her dedication to students and families in St. Cloud and to all those who work in our children's museums. They do incredible work that has a real impact on kids and families. And let's magnify that work. Let's keep that going. Let's make sure that more families and more kids have these opportunities to learn and grow and be the absolute best kids that they can be. Let's please include House File 1364 in your final education finance omnibus bill. And I thank you so much for your time and for your consideration this morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. We'll renew the motion of Representative Pryor's motion to lay over House File 1364 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Thank you. With that, Representative Perez Vega.
Well,
Welcome to your committee, Representative Perez Vega. Would you like to move House File 1108 over? Would you like to move House File 1108 before the committee for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
I would like to move HF 1108 in Education Finance, yes.
Thank you. Thank House you. File 1108 is before us now. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to present HF 1108, Madam Chair and members of the committee, to fund the Minnesota's Children's Museum All Play Access Program. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for agreeing to hear this bill today alongside so many other children's museums in the state. Also, a big thank you to my colleagues on this committee for joining me as co-authors and for acknowledging the power of play in the development of our young Minnesotans. If you remember one thing from today, know that 100% of the funding requested in this bill is used to provide free and reduced access to Minnesota's Children's Museum for low-income families. The state's portion of this funding has not been increased since 1997. Even with this proposed increase in funding, the state's portion of these critical access program dollars is less than half of what the museum spends every year to provide access to those who otherwise would not be able to attend the award-winning displays and groundbreaking program. I grew up spending countless hours at the Minnesota's Children's Museum at their old location in Bandana Square and was able to bring my own child to the new museum. So this is a full circle moment for me. Thinking back in 1997, I was 10 years old, and I remember when we heard that the Children's Museum was coming to downtown St. Paul right here in District 65B, in which I represent now, and I was the Skyway kid growing from grandma's who was so excited to run around in this facility where it bridged diversity and also was inclusive to members in our community that could not afford to go. We all had that opportunity to attend. Now my daughter gets to play dress up and decide whether she wants to be a firefighter or a mailwoman or get to do her favorite activities from playing with Thomas the Train and learning about the environment and also about the indigenous cultures of this land. With me today is Brianna Gurink, Vice President of Philanthropy for the Minnesota Children's Museum, who will, after a very short video, give a quick presentation on the legislations and explain what it means for those communities that otherwise would not have access to one of Minnesota's most treasured institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we go ahead and play the video, and then we'll go to your testimony.
We love the Children's Museum because
everybody wants to play.
Because everybody wants to play and have a good time.
I have been a member since I was a little girl here, since I was about 5 years old, so probably about 16 years now. All the kids are smiling, they're laughing. You see kids interacting with kids that they've never met before. You see kids interacting with adults. The environment is all around just very positive and happy.
My son just like squealed when we walked in here. He definitely feels free here, which is fun, and I don't worry about him like getting into something he's not supposed to. So it's nice to just like let him go crazy and just be him.
It's really nice to have them, you know, playing with kids of all backgrounds. They're learning to communicate and learning to share and take turns and be patient while they wait for the slides. So there's a lot that they are learning.
We're probably here at least once a week and just having him be able to interact with other kids. And I really like how the museum, that you guys change out the exhibit so much, so there's new things for him to experience, and we really enjoyed that.
A lot of what we've been looking for are activities for the kids to do that are not screens, but that are, especially in the winter and then in the dog days of summer when it's quite warm, things for them to do that are safe, that are creative, engaging, but are screen-free.
Over the last couple of years, it's been way too much screen time, so this has been a great outlet for us to get away and get some more healthy interaction with people and with, you know, just some playtime. Just her imagination has gone through the roof.
There's always something new and exciting. They're happy, they're engaged, they're having fun and learning without realizing it.
It's a great place to interact with kids our age and to learn and grow.
We love the Children's Museum because it's a place for all of our kids and all of their interests.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See ya. See you later, alligator.
Thank you for the video. That always makes me smile. Next up, we'll have the testifiers. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, thank you. My name is Brianna Gehring. I'm the Vice President of Philanthropy for Minnesota Children's Museum.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and the entire committee for having the power of play on the agenda today, and also to a special thank you to Representative Perez Vega for being such a champion, and the shout out to Bandana Square. That was my first experience at the Children's Museum as well. I am very honored to be representing Minnesota Children's Museum. I'm also a proud parent of a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old child as well. So it really means a lot to me to be able to speak to you today about the mission of Minnesota Children's Museum and how important it is that we provide access to all Minnesota families. So as you can see at the museum, we serve a diverse audience, and we're very proud that we get visitors from all counties in Minnesota. The museum has been sparking children's learning through play for more than 40 years, and throughout that time, we have had more than 12 million visitors come through our doors. So as I said, our mission is sparking children's learning through play. It's such a simple statement, but as many have shared here today, play is so profound and so important. What you heard in the voices and saw in the expressions in the video today was really the sheer joy that comes from playing, connecting with others, and making lifelong memories in our space. And also, I should note that that wasn't a very highly produced video we did. We didn't script it. We simply put up cameras in the museum one day and asked people what they appreciated about the museum, and got some very lovely results. So it's so incredible that what's happening during play and all of this joy is all the learning that's happening and all the critical skills that are happening for children. If you can think of taking a sneak peek behind the scenes in a child's brain, as many have stated today, they are developing the critical skills that they need not only to enter school, but for the skills that they need throughout their life. This is backed by a lot of research, and as you can see, is greatly backed by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Play helps build the skills needed for school and lifelong, and everything at Minnesota Children's Museum is purposely developed and designed to support the powers of play. So these are the words that are in that kind of greenish, bluish, blobby things is a very technical term that we use at the Children's Museum. But so these are the 7 skills that give children the tools they need to thrive both now and as adults. So they're going, they're having fun, but you can have confidence that behind the scenes, everything was made with intention to ensure that these skills are being developed. And most importantly, as also was stated today, they're open-ended. We don't give the end point. It's child-directed. It's an opportunity to test, to learn, and grow while all experiencing the joy of play. So all of us in this room can thank where we are today to the fact that we were building skills and playing as kids. Again, it's so important to ensure that income's not a barrier for families attending the museum. The largest program that we have to ensure we can uphold this commitment is through our All Play Access program. This provides free or steeply discounted tickets and memberships to income-qualified families throughout Minnesota. You can see on the map how wide this reaches of this specific program. The stars that you'll see indicate where there's either a Head Start or Early Head Start program that we partner with. And for families who are connected to those, they are automatically eligible for a free membership, annual membership for the museum. And we reach an audience of over 40,000 coming through this program each year. And of course, as you heard on the video, we receive great feedback. This quote of, wow, what an amazing experience. My 3-year-old had so much fun. I was so impressed by all the thought and care that went into creating each of the exhibits. What a gift to Minnesota. We'll definitely be back to visit. So we want to share that families are truly grateful for the opportunity to experience the museum. This chart shows the incredible growth that this program has had. You'll see in 2016 and 2017, the museum went through a large expansion and renovation project, and through some of the major construction, our doors were closed, and so that is why there was a dip in the attendance there for the access program. And then, of course, unfortunately, in 2020 and 2021, we had multiple closures due to the pandemic and also had capacity limits when our doors were open. So that is the dip in attendance there. However, it has not only rebounded, but it has increased. And we project 45,000 in this current fiscal year, 2023. As noted earlier, the funding for this has stayed flat since 1997.
So to put into context what our request means, the purple part of this pie chart represents the All Play Access program. Currently, the funding we receive covers 24% of the cost, and the increase would cover 44% of the annual cost for this specific program. And then, of course, the impact is tremendous. All families, regardless of income, can benefit from the unique learning and play experiences at Minnesota Children's Museum. Thank you again for the time today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any comments or questions? Representative Ella.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega, for bringing the bill forward. Everybody loves the Children's Museum. I've taken my kids there a ton of times. Just looking for clarity, when you opened, you said 100% of the funding would go to provide the free and reduced tickets, which I think is important. I'd love to see that 26% of minority families especially be able to have more access. But the bill language, as it's before us right now, says a portion of the grant funds would be used for that. So I'm just looking for clarity there. Is it 100%, or do we need to amend the bill language?
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you. Yeah, I would like to say that it is 100%, with the families that are being served alongside with those exhibits to be contributed to those families that are going to be there, that are reflective to those families' time. We're talking about languages. We're talking about different forms of exhibits that need to be upgraded to suit those families that are underprivileged, that deserve that right of translation services. I mean, you think about who these communities are serving. So I will say it is 100% going towards those families.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Representative Padilla, follow up?
Just one. So it's not really the grant fund isn't really going all to ticketing. It appears that part of it a certain amount of money can go to exhibit upgrades and other things that that the Children's Museum needs.
It's not going
to.
If you'd like to follow through with that, I'd like to ask for a testimony that I can follow through with you as well.
Brianna Grunette.
Yes, sure, absolutely. So yes, that cost that was represented is the cost per attendee to run the museum. So really that. The cost is greater, so that 44% is greater, so it would, and it helps to offset the ticket prices, the steeply reduced or free tickets and memberships.
Representative Huda. Hey, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is, I'm still confused after the answer on that. So I'm hearing the 100% funding, but with Representative Hudella's question, in the bill, 1.13, it says a portion. So I think the question is, and I don't know if it's to you or to, I don't know who, or the question is, why does the bill say a portion of the grant funds if it's 100%?
It's 100.
Representative Vega.
Thank you, Chairman. It's 100% going towards those reduced tickets or free entry.
Representative Altendorf?
Can you explain it to me?
Maybe we'll go to nonpartisan staff. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, these museum requests, some of them have been in the base budget for a number of years, and the language has changed each year over the last 6 years on this part of it. I think it's important to state it the way, you know, presumably all of the projects that get funded will go into a single appropriation. So I think the language there should be written to reflect exactly what you all are intending. And I think there's ambiguity in the current language that's here. If you want to say that it's all for the ticket reductions or some other purpose, you could do that. But it's generally going to be packaged with the others with the same rider language about what it's used for.
Representative Perez Vega.
Madam Chair, we could also amend that language to say 100% fully and not a portion, if that is being requested, we're totally okay with that.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I don't think that the question is really, it's not either way how you do it, because I wouldn't take, if you need funds in the museums in different areas, that's fine. But all I think both of us are seeing is the language is not matching the testimony. And then Mr. Strom said there's some ambiguity there. So all I'm saying is if it's 100% going to the tickets, then let's match the language to that. But if it's not, then the testimony didn't match what you said.
Got it. Representative Haddad.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And certainly not trying to tie the hands of the Children's Museum. I would rather see you folks have more flexibility in how you can use the funding. I think just important, though, to just make the language match, and would rather see you guys at the local level at the museum maybe have a little bit of additional flexibility and be able to think of potentially new creative things like providing a transit voucher with that free and reduced ticket so that the families could actually get there in addition to being able to get through the door. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hedala. Representative Perez or to the testifier, either one, follow-up comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I want to make this on the record that 100% of this funding is going to those reduced and free tickets for those families. There's other legislation that is for a whole different committee that is inclusive to the upgrades of exhibits and shows and et cetera, et cetera. But this is strictly for the financial opportunity to go towards those low-income families that deserve the same privilege of families who can afford to attend this museum.
Okay, thank you. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega, for bringing this forward. I actually think the way you wrote this is a good way to write it, because when we think about legacy, that is supposed to be about supplementing the work that the Children's Museum would do. And so that would be that would be new programming or things that you wouldn't be able to do. Ticket sales are not supplemental. The ticket and admission is the core of the museum. So that's not something that legacy funds or other parts of the state funds could be used for or should be used for. That wouldn't be a constitutional use under the legacy amendment. And so I actually think making sure that this money is going to the base is a smart way to go about this, and looking for other funds to do that supplemental work, that frosting, if you would, is a good way to do it. So I actually think the way that you've written this is pretty sound, and making sure that this money is going to the admission is the correct way to go about it. So thank you for that. I do have a question for your testifiers, though. And it would be, and I am curious about what you do in the absence of state funding to supplement ticket sale for low-income people. So, for example, I know the Minnesota Zoo allows people to use an EBT card to get into the zoo. And I know there's some, if you could delve a little bit more into some of the Head Start work you do and other ways to connect low-income Minnesotans with admission to the museum, I think would be helpful for me.
Thank you, Ms. Grinnick. Can you say your last name for me again, please, so I say it right?
Sometimes I'm confused about it. Well, Gehrink. Thank you.
Ms. Gehrink, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you for the question. So currently it's EBT, use of WIC, or a free or reduced lunch that would get you the free or steeply discounted or the Head Start programs as well. So we also do fundraising. I spend a lot of my time around this as well. And I'll say, so our All Play Access is this, steeply discounted or free. We have kind of a bigger umbrella Play for All Access program. So we have one Sunday a month that is free. We have that through a corporate partnership that we were able to secure. We also, that All Play doesn't include the very steeply discounted field trips that happen for schools that have 50% or more free or reduced lunch as well. But so we try to secure a lot of private funding through that, and it gets absorbed through our general operating as well.
Representative Jordan, follow up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you. Any other further questions or comments? Good discussion, members. Representative Perez Vega, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you to my testimony here and the great work that you do philanthropically to make sure that our kids are able, all of our Minnesota kids are able to enjoy that important play. This this Children's Museum means a lot to me. It means a lot to the families that I see that are incorporated and involved in the ideas of how play should be and how we play differently, especially my daughter. It's her favorite place to go. I don't know what I'd be able to do if there wasn't that Children's Museum downtown in a post-pandemic world of closure, especially when early childhood didn't have the opportunity to make friends right away or grow up with their cousins right away outside of a Zoom box. And this establishment of an institution brought the richness of how important it is to interact and have your kids have an imagination and determine what their highest potential will be. And that's what the Minnesota Children's Museum just does in such a great way. It's known statewide, it's known nationally, and it's time to continue that funding. It's been since 1997. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. With that, Representative Harris-Baker renews her motion that House File 1108 be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Members, I'm going to have you dig in your packets. We're going to do one more thing since we've talked about all the children's museums. I probably should have had Ms. Beckel go through this before we started talking. Sorry about that. But Ms. Beckel has a nice, handy spreadsheet for you to kind of walk through. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. If you take a look at this spreadsheet that is in your packets, you can see that the museums in question receive funding from both the Department of Education and Legacy. So that's two different omnibus bills, typically each biennium. So at the top, we have the Department of Education funding. At the bottom, the Legacy funds. And you can see that there is some overlap there. The legacy funds, you can see there's an asterisk there. Those are typically one time only. So if you go over to the FAR columns on the right, the base columns, you'll see that there is no base in the legacy area because there's no money built in. Whereas in the education area, there is a base built in. So the requests that you have heard today would be built on top of the base numbers you see in the columns fiscal year 24 and fiscal year 25. I do have to apologize. I seem to have noted special session 2019 twice instead of counting special session 2021 at all. So the numbers in fiscal years 22 and 23 for the legacy funds are incorrect. Those should say $375,000 per year for the Minnesota Children's Museum. That's the first item under legacy funds. Then zero for the Minnesota Children's Museum of Rochester STEM exhibit for both years of that biennium. And then the other children's museums would receive $550,000 each year of that biennium for a total in the legacy funds total of $925,000 each year of that biennium. So I apologize for that oversight.
No worries, Ms. Beckel. With that, members, any questions on the spreadsheet? Representative Sensenmura.
Yeah, thank you. So this is, I'm just wanting to clarify so I understand it. So, for example, the Minnesota Children's Museum bill, this is $500 above the $269,000 base?
Ms. Beckel.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you. And then the Bakken, I don't see the Bakken Museum on here, so the Bakken Museum is not included in the base?
Ms. Beckel, Representative Sensenmura, I can answer that. They're brand new to asking for funding.
Got it. Thank you.
Ms. Beckel.
Madam Chair and members, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I believe that for the Minnesota Children's Museum, as the bill is written, the total appropriation would be $500,000 per year. So the increase over base would be $231,000 over base. I apologize for that.
Thank you. Thank you. With that, members, any other questions on the spreadsheet? So we will go to Representative Keeler's bill, House File 1375.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Welcome to Education Finance Committee again. With that, I will move House File 1375 before the committee and go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1375 was a bill that was brought to me by my superintendent in my school. As many of you know, I used to work in the school district as a Native American liaison. And what I know is that when we spend money on our buildings, it means we can't spend money on our children. And so that's what this bill does. And just to not take up too much time, I'll send it over to my testifiers.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Brandon Lunich, Superintendent Moorhead Schools. And you want me to go?
Yes.
Okay, so a little background. We had purchased former Sam's Club facility that closed in Moorhead on January 26th of 2018. And it was part of our 2019 bond, which included a brand new high school and then the purchase of the former Sam's Club to be converted from an occupancy mercantile to an occupancy educational facility. And we have converted that to what we call our Career Academy, which in that facility offers programming for career or trades and industries, culinary arts, health careers, child development, and lab space for future careers that we may not even know about as of today. And by acquiring this facility, we were able to acquire it for $29 a square foot. It was an 18.5-acre site and 144,000-square-foot facility. So we acquired it for about $29 a square foot. And once we converted it to our educational facility, it ended up 172,000 square feet because we added a second floor. And that was completed for around $157 a square foot, with the current costs of construction around $300 a square foot. The challenge for us in terms of our facility was our hope was to be able to utilize health and safety revenue. But unfortunately, there is a discrepancy in statute when you're converting a facility versus to when you acquire one that's already educationally related. So we would ask that House File 1375 be supported so school districts like Moorhead and Fergus Falls are allowed to access the health and safety funding as we were required by code to upgrade our HVAC system rather than keep the old HVAC system in the facility when it was a mercantile or a former Sam's Club. Would appreciate your support on this as we move forward, and I will turn it over to Mr. Drake.
Go ahead and proceed. State your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Jeff Drake. I am the superintendent of Fergus Falls Public Schools. A little history on our project. On February 3rd, 2018, Target Corporation closed its retail store in Fergus Falls. The 89,000 square foot facility remained vacant for over a year. The Fergus Falls Public School District purchased the building in September of 2019 for $1.55 million. That's $17 per square foot, and it included an 8.6-acre site. In total, the project has had two phases. Phase one is complete and turned approximately 50,000 square feet into an early childhood center. Phase two would develop the remaining 40,000 square feet to accommodate our kindergarten program. Cost estimates are just over $12 million. Of that, $4 million is necessary to bring the HVAC system up to ASHRAE standards and meet the code requirements for an occupancy E rating. Without the $4 million in LTFM health and safety funding, we were unable to move forward with phase two. Ultimately, how does this bill benefit our community and our children? It paves the way for fiscally prudent use of tax dollars, We can repurpose the former box store for about 50 cents on the dollar in comparison to new construction costs. It removes blight in our communities through adaptive reuse of empty buildings. The building renovations provide Otter early childhood programming with modern features and amenities that feature experiential learning and play-based learning. It increased the number of preschool slots. It allowed more flexible scheduling options, which also better prepared students for kindergarten. We gained outdoor play space, and the facility enabled us to serve school meals on the campus. We also leased a portion of the facility to Children's Corner, which enabled them to serve an additional 20 children. Finding available childcare is a huge issue statewide. Phase two will provide a much better learning environment for our kindergarten students, as the current school, built in 1939, has several limitations. It will also alleviate overcrowding in our high school by building and creating additional space to reconfigure some grade levels. In summary, both the Moorhead and Fergus Falls projects demonstrate that creative and cost-effective adaptive reuse of empty commercial facilities can provide substantial savings to the community and a multitude of educational benefits for our students and families. Thank you for your time and consideration and your continued support of public education.
Thank you so much. Members, do we have any questions or comments? Representative Pryor.
And again, this is just to clarify what we're hearing and understanding from this piece of legislation is you're saying that basically the money is available to the school districts for completing this work of the HVAC systems. You just need the, by statute, you have to have that flexibility of switching over where the money is to where it's needed right now.
Yeah, if I understand
your... Go ahead and state your name for the record again. Proceed.
No, my name?
Yes.
Brandon Lunick, I'm sorry. If I'm understanding your question correctly, the health and safety funding mechanism already exists for the K-12 schools. In current statute, there's the limit of if it's remodeling and if it's new construction, you can't utilize that funding mechanism for the project. This, however, in our minds, is a repurpose and allowing us to access that funding is a critical component for districts to access the funding buckets that are available to finish out a project such as these.
Representative Pryor, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing the legislation forward and allowing us this opportunity to help your school district and other school districts in the same position. Thank you, Representative Keeler.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, Representative Keeler, closing comments.
The one thing I want to point out is this makes our schools really cost effective in their ability to expand their education opportunities in any of our communities. This is not just a Moorhead, Fergus Falls bill. So for those of you who are looking for really creative ways to expand, we know that retail is not necessarily the business anymore. So we have these big buildings that are in our communities that we want to be able to utilize in a way that is really valuable. And education is the way that we see that that's there. So this is being cost effective, it's being creative, it's reducing and reusing buildings in our communities. And eventually this could be a possibility to help serve any of your communities and their education needs as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Keeler. With that, I'll renew the motion to lay over House File 1375. For possible inclusion in the education finance bill. And members, we have our final bill up with Representative Flaherty. Representative Flaherty, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move your bill before us for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
Okay. With that, members, House File 1761 is before us. Go ahead and proceed.
I'm really excited about this bill, and part of it is the students that are here to present today. So this bill has bipartisan support. It's bill number 1761. The bill focuses on the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organization, the MFSO, agency funding, and also the Career and Technical Student Organization, the CTSO, operation funds. So the MFSO is seeking operational funds for itself and the many CTOs that it serves. And in accordance to the Minnesota Statute 124D, 0.34, subdivision B, the state shall identify and secure appropriate funding for the basic staffing and foundations of the individual student career technical organizations. So the CTOs are intercurricular, and they bring technical skills and occupational knowledge aligned with the industry standards to prepare students for post-secondary education workforce. The CTOSs are embedded into 85% of the Minnesota CTE classrooms, and a recent study showed that 95% of the educators found that the CTOs to be an effective way to keep students engaged. And in addition, that same study looked at students that had dropped out and figured out that after talking to them, that 81% of the dropouts said that they would have been more engaged and possibly would have stuck with school had they had real-world learning opportunities. So the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations, the MFSO, was created in 1996 to ensure the stability and provide collaborative leadership around the CTSO, the Career Technical Student Organizations. So the Minnesota CTOs serve students in middle schools, high schools, and college, and they've served over 26,000 students this year. They are integrated with about 85% of the CTE programs across the state, with an estimated impact of more than 140,000 students. Some of the areas that are covered are agriculture, healthcare, business, marketing, manufacturing, transportation, and IT. So I'm going to just highlight seven of them, and that's DECA, which focuses on marketing management and entrepreneurship. FFA, and it focuses on leadership, growth, career success through agricultural, food, and natural resources. The BPA, the Business and Professionals of America, focuses on just making people ready for, or students ready for, world-class workforce experience by showing them leadership and citizenship and academic and technical skills. The fourth one is FFA, and it focuses on developing students in agriculture, food, and natural resources. There's also HOSA that focuses on health occupations with students, and FCCL, which is Family Consumer Science Education. And then the final one I'm going to mention is the Skills USA, and it's a partnership between students and teachers and the industry working together just to have a, you know, create a skilled workforce. So with that, I think actually I'm just at this point just going to turn it over to some of our testifiers, because as you see, we have a broad classification of occupations that we cover, from sciences, agriculture, health, marketing, and construction, manufacturing, transportation, technology, so law enforcement, and cosmetology. So we have a variety of careers that we cover, and I just want to turn it over to our next testifier, Madam Chair.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, I'm Emily Sade, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations. Thank you for that robust introduction. I was worried you were going to say all of my testimony here. Thank you, Representative Clardy. And thank you, Madam Chair and representatives on the committee, for having us here today. I will be brief because I don't have much to say anymore, but our real experts are here today. We have students. A couple of points that I want to make. Just to reiterate, Our student organizations are integrated into 85% of the career and technical education school districts, school district programs across the state. They are intercurricular. So that's what makes them unique. They're not like an after-school club. They're actually integrated into classroom curriculum. So when we're talking about Skills USA, and you might have a manufacturing program or an engineering program, it would be actually integrated into the classroom and that curriculum. And again, I feel like I don't have to even go over the areas, but we've got business, BPA, which aligns with business and finance education, DECA, which aligns with marketing, hospitality, and tourism, and FCCLA, which aligns with family and career, family sciences, family and consumer sciences, and early childhood education, FFA, which, of course, is agriculture, food, and natural resources, and if you don't know, there's the jacket. And HOSA, which is health sciences, health occupations, and I think, and Skills USA, which is technical and industrial, and that encompasses transportation, cosmetology, engineering, manufacturing, broad swath of career and technical education. Another point I want to briefly kind of drive home here is our CTSOs, our career and technical student organizations, actively drive the workforce development because the students are actually learning industry standards. That's another unique piece that the student organizations bring in the classroom. They're actually aligned with industry committees, and they're creating career and technical skill assessments that are in the classroom. They host a variety of conferences where the students are able to actually showcase technical skills through competitive events that are actually judged by industry members. And a lot of times those competitions are even hosted at industry facilities. And that unique opportunity and relationship actually creates workforce learning opportunities. So it might be an apprenticeship, it might be a work-based learning program, but that is kind of the glue that creates that piece. And it also, as you're going to hear in a minute from our students, these student organizations help students solidify their career choices. They also provide service learning opportunities where they're themselves nonprofits, but they partner with other nonprofits for service learning. And the final thing that I'm going to touch on is we're looking to continue our underserved populations program. About 10 years ago, we started this program to try to overcome some of those barriers to create meaningful participation in the CTSOs with underserved students and historically disenfranchised populations. We've done that kind of in two different ways. One arm of the program is through professional development, educating career and technical educators and administrators on creating a more inclusive environment through poverty awareness training and equity and inclusion training. And the other part of that program was providing direct grants to the individual student organizations for them to be able to create more diverse leadership and drive a more diverse membership population. So I will be available for questions at the end, but I really do want you guys to hear from our true experts. So
thank you.
State your name.
Go ahead, state your name for the record. Proceed.
First and foremost, I would like to thank you all for your time. My name is Sabani Anandkumar. I'm currently a high school senior at Shakopee High School, graduating in June, and I'm honored to have the privilege to speak to you all on behalf of Minnesota HOSA as the current vice president and board representative. Everyone's journey to healthcare is a bit different, and today I'd like to talk to you all about mine. I knew from a young age that I wanted to enter healthcare. However, as a first-generation American with no connections or familial ties to healthcare, I was lost and didn't know how to achieve this goal. Then, towards the end of my freshman year, I joined HOSA Future Health Professionals. In HOSA, I got the guidance and knowledge I otherwise needed to gain. HOSA Future Health Professionals is an international organization, the premier talent pipeline towards healthcare, and is 100% student-led at all levels. We provide our members conferences, competitions, mentorships, leadership opportunities, networking opportunities, a supportive community, and more. Our students have already begun saving lives in the real world. Within the last year, we've had students from Oklahoma save a stabbing victim not even 10 miles from our international conference, and had a student talk to the president about mental health. All of this before our students have even graduated college or their respective post-secondary institutions. I also made connections to professionals who guided me in my healthcare disparities research, which is currently being used by clinical educators and clinic diversity training, and it's where I got my first job. It was through HOSA that I learned about an internship with a prominent women's health organization, and I'm using the knowledge gained from the internship to make a proposal to my school board to ensure free menstrual products for students in the district. It was during these internships and projects my passion for women's health was awoken. I learned that we currently have a national shortage of 8,000 OBGYNs as of right now, which is estimated to surpass 22,000 by 2050. As a woman and just a member of our society, it's terrifying to know that our population can't get the care that they deserve. Like me, HOSA has helped students find, recognize, and foster their passions in a safe and supportive community, which is especially crucial when Minnesota specifically is experiencing a 26.7% increase in the need for healthcare professionals from 2020 to 2030 alone, with over 372,668 total job openings needing to be filled, much greater than any other occupation. And while our students have already begun bridging this gap in care, we need more resources and funding to ensure that we can continue to enter the field. HOSA truly molds the health of tomorrow. And to ensure that our lives and our future generations' lives are safe, we need to invest in our future medical leaders. So I humbly ask you to support this bill so we can continue to provide our members the best resources and education possible so that they may in turn provide you the best care. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, committee members. My name is Caleb Jarvis, and I am the president of Minnesota DECA. When I came into high school, I struggled with being shy, quiet, and had an overall lack of confidence. I remember my freshman year of high school when I had to give a presentation in front of my class of 30 people, and I was mortified. Through my time in DECA, I have come to grow my social, public speaking, and communication skills to a point I would have never thought imaginable. It is through not only DECA, as well as CTSO opportunities, that these previously unimaginable opportunities have become a reality. For those of you who may not know, DECA is a business and marketing competition organization that offers its members the opportunity to compete in various business, marketing, finance, and hospitality-based competitive events. One thing that I personally love about DECA is the variety that it offers to its members. Our members have the opportunity to compete in anything from a sales demonstration, where they give a sales pitch to a judge with an item of their choice, to a community awareness project. In a community awareness project, members can expect to create an awareness campaign centered around an issue in their own community, as well as provide the rationale for the completion of said campaign. When I began my awareness campaign, as this was an event that I competed in at our state conference this past weekend, I looked to my community to attempt to identify potential issues, and one major problem stood out, the opioid crisis. Through this opportunity presented to me by DECA, I successfully ran a fentanyl awareness campaign over the course of the last 5 months. Through the use of fentanyl awareness events, as well as student involvement days at my local high school, I am extremely proud of the outcome. However, it must be said that I would never have had such an opportunity to perform service in my community had it not been for DECA as well as CTSO opportunities. Thank you for listening. It has been an honor.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Mackenzie Alberts. I'm serving as the Minnesota FFA State Secretary. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. Like I said, I'm serving as the Minnesota FFA Secretary, representing nearly 16,000 Minnesota FFA members today. I'm a graduate of Pine Island High School. My experience in career and technical education through agriculture education courses and FFA makes me confident in my career pathway. Growing up as the seventh generation on my family's dairy farm, I pretty much had my mind made up.
I was going to be a farmer just like Dad. It wasn't until I entered my first agricultural, food, and natural resource science class that my eyes opened to the diverse opportunities available in agriculture. After enrolling in classes with my agriculture teacher and FFA advisor, Mr. Erickson, I discovered the unique possibilities CTE classes provide students. Aside from our production-based classes, I engaged in a modern agriculture and technology course to understand the progressive technology implemented in agricultural sectors daily, and even became a certified tractor operator. The National FFA organization reinforced my education in these classes. FFA provided a chance to grow as an individual and a leader. It gave me a direction for my future. Students are ready for the world because CTE classes and all our student organizations, like FFA, allow them to learn, grow, and apply their skills to depict who they are and where they are going. Student leaders such as myself lead these student organizations. On Friday, I will facilitate a leadership development conference for middle and high school students alongside my team. We've reached even more students thanks to the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations Disadvantaged Population Grants, which remove financial barriers to attending leadership conferences like ours. With over 40% of our students coming from low economic families, the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations must continue to fund all student organizations as we apply what we learn in our classrooms and prepare for our future careers and lives as citizens. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Was there one more testifier, I believe? Please state, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lavin Rada, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Educators, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations Board. Each of these students that you have heard from today started in one of our career and technical education classrooms. I am happy to represent those teachers and to invest in these students every single day as we prepare for our future and those that are working in these careers. And just want to share that we fully support this bill and the continued support of our investment in our future leaders and our students across all career and technical education areas. Thank you, and we're open for questions.
Thank you so much. With that, members, I think we'll go to the table for questions or comments. Representative Fryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have two questions, and one is specifically I was interested in the HOSA organization. And thank you for our testifier,
Silvani.
Appreciate your interest and the work that you've done. So an organization like that, I am particularly interested in people going, young people being interested in a career in healthcare because we are desperate. And we are at a crisis right now for in all fields of healthcare right now. So how widespread is the organization within Minnesota right now? Are you in some high schools, most high schools?
Go ahead, Ms. Said.
Yes, Emily Said. Thank you. Thank you for the question. All of our student organizations are statewide. HOSA, I believe, right now has 38 and 42 chapters. So that means that they're in 38 to 42 career and technical education healthcare programs. In order for our student organizations to be in a classroom or to be at a school, they do have to align with a career and technical education program. So you can't just start, unfortunately, as much as we love HOSA, you can't just start a random HOSA chapter, Health Occupation Students of America. You can't just start a random chapter somewhere, but I believe they are aligned with almost all of our healthcare programs at our K-12 level.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pryor, follow-up question.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and that does introduce my second question, which is I would also like to understand better the intra aspect of these organizations and what how that looks, and then kind of related to that, this additional funding, what that gives us for all of these programs.
Go ahead, Ms. Said or Ms. Rada.
I'll start and then we'll get into it. So all of our programs are intracurricular. What that means is if you look at career and technical education, they all have three components. One of those components is in the classroom. So every single student starts in a classroom, for example, a health occupations classroom, maybe medical terminology. They then are allowed to apply those skills in two environments. One of those is a work-based learning environment, which may be anything from job shadowing to a placement or an internship or an apprenticeship. And then the third component is our leadership development program, which is all of our student organizations. So that's the unique thing about current technical education is they all start in a classroom, but we give them two opportunities to apply it, both in real life work experiences, but also through our student organizations, which include leadership and service development and all those socio-emotional pieces.
Thank you, Representative Pryor.
And just that other, the other part of the question I tacked on, which is we were talking about additional funding to the base and then you know, what are the opportunities that you know that you want to expand into that we're not able to capture right now? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Said.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Well, our student organizations, they do get some external funding, a very small amount from membership dues from the students, but in order to keep that those membership dues down and to continue to provide the hands-on learning at the conferences with the actual skilled and competitive events. A lot of times those conferences, when we talk about those assessments and those conferences and skilled events, those actually also lead to industry certification, making them workforce ready. So we want to make sure that those opportunities, when we talk about meaningful participation, that's what we mean. We want to make sure that those opportunities, the price tag, the access point for those is available to all populations so that the experience is available to lower income, free and reduced lunch students. And a lot of our programs are in those schools. And a lot of times these are the programs that are picking up those students.
Representative Pryor, follow-up? Okay, thank you. And I had just a quick question because it has kind of dovetails on Representative Pryor. From what I remember, too, in order to get federal Perkins money, you have to have one of these organizations in your school working within the curriculum and the program, right?
Yes. Said?
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Madam Chair, I'm so glad that you brought up Perkins, too, because a lot of times, sometimes folks will say to us, well, why don't you use more Perkins money? Can't you get a grant for this and use Perkins money? Well, aside from that, it's using Perkins money, we are able to use some of that, but it's very restrictive. It can't be used on individual students.
No.
So when we talk about servicing underserved and underrepresented populations, you can see clearly I'm frustrated with the Perkins money. We need different money to be able to do that. That's why this is so key and so important.
Thank you. And then Representative Altendorf. Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy. I just love this bill, and I don't think it's any, you know, surprise here in the room, but any time that we can be supporting our students and giving them these different experiences, I can tell you from firsthand, you know, especially many of, we have five kids, but so many of our children have been in these different organizations, and look at how well these students spoke, and that's one of the most frightening things to do in public. And it really is attributed, yeah, I loved your testimony, but it really is attributed to these organizations, and I've seen it over and over again that they teach these life skills like public speaking and things that they would not get just in a regular classroom because it's very hands-on type experience. So especially with our workforce crisis that we have in Minnesota, and again, we want to be good stewards of Minnesota and what's healthy for Minnesota. This is such a wonderful place for, I believe, for the education finance to be putting our money to support these and to also, you know, really help students want to stay in school. I toured the Red Wing School District, and they have a great CTE program, just wonderful. And And anywhere we can put these dollars, I'm telling you, I see those students just light up in these classrooms, and it really attributes to this. So Representative Clardy, kudos. This is an awesome bill, and please make sure this one gets put in.
Thank you. Representative Clardy, I think you're going to have a lot of co-authors all of a sudden. So authors, houseauthors.com, just like authors at authors.mn. Yeah. So I just, that's a really great connection to having to fund these organizations so we can bring more money in for all those CTE courses and kind of that hand in hand. So I'm going to go to Representative Knudsen, then Representative Kreisha, and then we will be done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Clardy, thank you for offering this bill. And I am a co-author, and I do support this. And a big shout out to our FFA. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Kreisha.
You've covered everything.
All right. With that, I will toss it back over to Representative Clardy for final comments.
Well, I should say I don't have anything to say, but I guess as a committee member, as a parent, as a teacher, as a former school board member, these programs work. Engagement, student engagement, you know, we need to have everything out there that children can engage in to be productive citizens, and these programs are wonderful, and I'm so proud of these guys, and I just want to take them home. But anyway, thank you so much for hearing this bill, and the program says it all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy, and thank you to the students. Having your voices here is what makes our work even more valuable, because we have you at the center when we're making decisions. So thank you for all that you're doing and for bringing your voices here. And with that, I will renew the motion to lay over House File 1761 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Members, thank you for the work this week. The schedule is going to be posted soon for all next week. We meet at our three regular committee times. And then for your calendars, we're also meeting Friday as well at 10:30 a.m. in State Office Building Room 10. So we'll be spending some quality time together Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And with that, we are adjourned.